Sagam, dear listeners, this is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, welcoming you to this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. It's a beautiful summer morning here in Prashanti, and I'm sure you would have heard in the previous show that the sizzling part of Puttaparthi summer is just around the corner. But so far, so good. And even otherwise, we have nothing to worry as long as we lead our lives in the shade of His love, isn't it? And to sit here week after week, speak about Swami and share His love and light with all of you is a blessing that pales every inconvenience, if there are any, to insignificance. So before all else, let's offer our most loving pranams at the lotus feet of our most beloved Swami. Coming to the show this week, as we always do, I have a question from one of our listeners today. Really speaking, it's a set of questions. It is not a question from the listener, but a question that was posed to the listener, which has been in turn posed to me. It's an interesting set of questions, no doubt, and it is so for a particular reason too. But all those details will have to wait, for we are not yet done with the quote of the week, right? It is that part of the program where I impose on all of you a quote I found interesting. And from the feedback I receive, I guess many others too find them interesting and enlightening. So here comes the quote. Today I will read out the quote. Let's see if any of you guess whose words these are before I reveal the name to you. I quote, "Sunlight fell upon the wall. The wall received a borrowed splendor. Why set your heart on a piece of earth? O simple one, seek out the source which shines forever." End of quote. So any guesses? Well, if any of you thought to yourself, this one must be a Rumi quote, well, give yourself a pat on the back, for it is indeed a profound quote from the 13th century Sufi mystic Jalaluddin Rumi. Like all profound quotes, these lines have layers of meaning. But one central idea that this quote conveys is similar to that the Upanishads say. And Swami has also spoken about it extensively. Here Rumi says that a wall reflects the sunlight and appears splendorous. Imagine a nice, brightly painted wall that literally shines in the daylight. The effulgence does not come from the wall or the paint on it, right? It comes from the sun's rays. The wall just reflects it. Same is the relationship between the sun and the moon. Truly speaking, there is nothing like the moonlight. For the moon has no light of its own. The moon only reflects the sunlight. And when the sun is out of sight in the sky at nights, the moon seems to be shining and ruling the sky. Swami explains, the Atma or the true self is the sun, and the mind is the moon. The mind has no effulgence of its own. It draws glory from the Atma. But when we lose sight of the Atma, we end up celebrating the mind as brilliant. And as Rumi says, don't be lost in the beauty of the wall that reflects the light. Look at the source that shines forever. Well, there's another way of looking at this quote, and it is very important I mention that, especially in a program such as this. Imagine, as I said, there's nothing like moonlight. The moon's light is the sunlight reflected off its surface. But still, what a lot of difference between the two. Imagine finding your way under the sunlight and finding your way under the moonlight. People like me can sit here and give advice endlessly on what to do and what not to do, how to do and how to do it better. Yes, we all are indeed speaking, reflecting Swami's wisdom and message. There's no doubt about that. But end of the day, we are like the moonlight. It may be pleasant and cool, but to find your path and reach your destination, you cannot use the moonlight endlessly. It is far better to take recourse in the sunlight. We all must turn to Swami for light, and as Swami has said repeatedly, He is there in each one in the form of the conscience. His voice is ever present within, waiting to guide. So do listen to the Radio Sai Answering Booth program, but always, always seek to follow and obey only the voice within. Dear listeners, before we head to the questions for today, permit me to read that quote for you one more time. Rumi says, "Sunlight fell upon the wall. The wall received a borrowed splendor. Why set your heart on a piece of earth, O simple one? Seek out the source which shines forever." Now let's head to the question for this week. In fact, it's a set of two questions, as I mentioned earlier. It's from Sister Deepika, and she's writing to us from New Jersey, USA. And this is what she has to ask. Sairam, Brother Prem, I have two questions on behalf of a 10-year-old child from our SSC class. He asked, can you prove me God exists? Why God made bad people? Why is there murder, wars and wrong things happening? Please help us how to make a child understand this. Thank you so much. With love, Deepika, New Jersey, USA. So that's the question that we have for this week. As I said, it's not the question from the listener directly, but a question which was posed to the listener by a 10-year-old in the SSC class. Well, it's much easier to explain to elders than to explain to children, and that's why SSC and Balvika's teachers are the real stars of the Sai family. But well, it's a question posed to us, and with prayers to Swami, we'll definitely endeavor to answer it for Sister Deepika. Well, my answer is going to basically be in two parts. First, in general, what should be our approach when we answer such questions to children? And the second would be, well, if this question was asked to me by a 10-year-old, how would I try and explain that to that child? Coming to the first part of, you know, what should be our approach when answering such questions to children, I think one of the first few questions that we had on the show here was from one Mr. Rajesh Mohanan, if I'm not wrong. He's from Bangalore. And he asked a question which was quite similar about his children asking him about Swami and why they are not able to see Swami when they come to Parthi now. And there was one thing which I'd mentioned there which I would like to repeat here. See, when we answer children, I think we should be absolutely confident when we say, yes, God is there. And don't be ambiguous in your answer whether God is there or not. Be very, very firm in saying that, yes, God is there. And your confidence is what matters more than the explanation that you give. So when you answer, is God there, or can you prove God is there to me, say with confidence, yes, God is there, I know it. I may be able to prove it to you or may not be able to prove it to you, but I believe God is there. You know, how many parents and teachers have had the good fortune of knowing an avatar, of having seen, having heard, and having moved with the Lord Himself? So if you and I cannot say it with confidence, no teacher, no parent will be able to say that with that confidence. So when asked this question, have no ambiguity in your answer. Say with confidence, yes, God is there. I'll try to explain it to you, but whether I prove it to you or not, I believe that God is there. And I mean, even as I'm making this point, I'm reminded of one of the Guru Purnima discourses, the Guru Purnima in 1986, when Swami, towards the end of the discourse, he said, today I'm going to give you all a mantra. And he said, this is not the usual Panchakshari mantra or the Ashtakshari mantra or a mantra which is relating to any particular deity. This is also a Panchakshari mantra, but this is very important. And then Swami went on to say that if you keep this mantra in your mind, keep reminding yourself of this, and also share this mantra with the others, be sure that the world is going to become a better place and you are going to become a better person. And that mantra which Swami said was Devudunnadu. In Telugu, Swami said Devudunnadu, which means God is or God exists. And Swami went on to say that this is one mantra which if you remember all the time, you are going to be a very, very balanced person. You are going to be able to cross across your difficulties, ups and downs in life. And it's so very beautiful. And Swami said that in every situation, you know, somebody who cheats you, you say God exists and I know God is going to take care. Some problem comes your way, you say God exists and I know God is going to be in control of this, He is in control of the situation. So Swami went on to say that this is the most important thing and you need to be very firm on this and be able to share it with others with the same amount of confidence. Yes, God exists. And this is what Swami said on that Guru Purnima day. Let's say that you probably don't relate to Swami as an avatar, as the divinity walking on earth. It's all right. Even if you look at Swami as a guru, the what calls for when you look at somebody as a guru is complete acceptance of what that person says. And here is Swami saying, Devudunnadu. And that is enough. God exists. If Swami says, I believe it completely, right? The second point is, when they ask about God, especially a concept like this, give simple, straightforward answers. Don't try to be politically correct. Don't try to be comprehensive. Don't try to be philosophical. It's okay if children begin with a very simple concept of a God, even if they think of God as a person sitting there and dispensing grace. It doesn't matter. Even if they start with a very simplistic idea of God, it doesn't matter. In fact, I recall reading somewhere there is that concept. There is a concept called the Wittgenstein's ladder, where they say that when you teach somebody a concept, you teach them the most simplistic approach to that concept, even if it is factually incorrect. You give them that, and they will, as part of their journey, go beyond that factual inaccuracies and come to the comprehensive understanding. And that's so true when we are speaking to children. Now, don't try to explain to the children the concept that God is energy and He is everywhere and things like that. Be very straightforward and very simplistic in your explanation. Another beautiful example which I came across is, you know, we all study physics, right? And in quantum mechanics, one of the most important things which we study is the structure of the atom. And even today in most schools, when they teach the structure of the atom, the first thing they teach us is the Bohr theory or the Bohr's structure of an atom. And the beautiful thing is, today when we look back, we know that Bohr's theory was factually incorrect, right? We know that it was a wrong theory. And much later, the other scientists came by, and Schrodinger was one who gave the most comprehensive structure of the atom. But the fact is, even though we know that Bohr's theory of an atom is wrong, is factually inaccurate, we still teach that in school. And I believe there was a set of scientists who, you know, did a small survey and research into, is it good to teach the Bohr theory, which is inaccurate, to the children so that they can understand the quantum mechanical representation of an atom. And I think it was researchers from the University of Colorado who did a very comprehensive study over many years, and they came up with the idea that teaching the Bohr theory, even though it is factually inaccurate, helps the students come to the better understanding of the Schrodinger equation and the Schrodinger model of the atom. So in that sense, you don't have to be comprehensive in your answer to the children. Give them a very simple idea, even if it is not complete, even if it is partially inaccurate, as long as you are giving them a model which, you know, you can take the clue from Swami. Swami always speaks about God even as a person, and Swami also speaks about God as, you know, all love, and He is there to take care of you and guide you. It's all right. Even if you give them that concept of God, I think it's all right. So don't try to be politically correct or comprehensive. Give them a simple idea of God, description of God that they can understand. Okay, you don't have to give them a Vedantic comprehensive description of God. Now coming to the second part of the question, as I said, before I do that, there's a third thing which I'd like to say, that a very, very beautiful and easy way of explaining difficult concepts to children, even to us who are, as Rabindranath Tagore calls, toddlers in understanding, is through analogies and stories. And isn't that what Swami did all the time? Swami always taught us the most profound messages through Chinnakathas. And of course, I don't need to tell this to SSE teachers and Balvikas teachers. I know that they're doing it all the time. But in general, I'm just making this point that there is no better way to explain concepts, especially very, very difficult concepts to children, than by explaining it through simple analogies and through simple stories. In fact, even Vedanta speaks of this as a very, very easy way of explaining difficult concepts. Because as I had said once in a program before, you're talking of concepts which cannot be always seen and heard and comprehended through your senses, right? So you need an extension of understanding from what you already know. Your understanding has to be expanded to comprehend what cannot be known through the senses. So analogies and stories is a very, very beautiful and simple way of teaching things to children. All right. So that's about, in general, of how do you approach these kind of questions when posed by children, 10-year-olds, right? So now if a 10-year-old kid was to come and ask me this question, can you prove to me the existence of God? Well, that's going to be a difficult one, isn't it? Okay, I'm going to put it across this way. Let's say there is a room which no one has entered before, right? And there are about 100 people outside the room. No one has gone into the room, and there is this, call it a rumor, or call it a prophecy, or call it a hypothesis, that there is God inside that room, right? None of these 100 people have gone into the room. The person inside the room has never come out. The door has been never opened. But of those 100 people, some believe that there is God, even though they have not seen him. And there is this other set of people who believe there is no God inside because no one has gone in and seen him, and nor has anybody from inside come out. Now, both of these groups who believe that God is there and the group which believe that God is not there don't have direct proof of his existence or his absence of existence. Both choose to believe in what they want to believe, right? So there is no way these people can be absolutely accurate of their observation of whether there is God or there is no God. Now, this group of people who believe that God is there in that room, what do? They keep knocking at the door with the hope that somebody from inside will open and they can see who is inside. They keep knocking and knocking, but there is no response. And the group which does not believe in God, they say that, see, you've been knocking and nobody's opening, which means there's nobody inside. But this group which believes continues to knock. And let's say that one day, one of these people happen to have this door opened after they are knocking. And they go inside this room, and then they come out. And they tell you, you know what? I saw the person inside, and God does exist. So these 100 people outside have not gone into the room. They have not had a peep inside. Probably there's no keyhole for that door. But this one person who's got to go inside has come out and said, you know what? I've seen inside the room and God is there. Same is the case with all of us. That one person who goes inside and comes out is whom we call a saint. And we have many, many saints throughout the world and throughout the ages who have come and told us that, you know what, I've seen inside and God is there. So I've not seen him myself, but someone I trust has seen and I take his word for it. For example, let's say, this question has come from the US, let's say that there's somebody sitting in New York, and someone asks me that, is the Statue of Liberty still standing in the state of New York? Well, I've never been to New York. I've seen only pictures of the Statue of Liberty, but probably I can call up somebody in New York and ask them, is the Statue of Liberty still there? And if they say it is there, then I take their word for it, and I say with confidence, you know, I don't say it with, maybe it's still there, somebody told me. I say it with confidence, yes, it is there, I've checked with the person who's in New York, and I know it is there, right? So even though I have not seen it directly, even though I have not been there myself, I can say with confidence that it is there because I have the word of somebody whom I trust. And same is the case with all of these saints over the ages. And what is this knocking at the door which we were talking about? It is nothing but prayer, right? It's nothing but the act of praying. And these saints have been praying and praying and praying so hard, and the process of prayer makes them pure, right? And one day God decides, all right, this one has been knocking for so long and he is pure enough to come inside. And when God decides that way, he's going to allow this person to walk into the room and see him. And allows this person to walk out of the room and tell all those others, you know what, you can continue knocking because God is there inside. Maybe when you're explaining this to children, this is probably the most appropriate time to speak of those many, many saints that we have had. There is the story of Vivekananda who goes all around the place when he was this little boy, Naren. He has this very same question. Does God exist? Can anybody prove to me that God exists? Has anybody seen God with their own eyes? So he goes around asking a lot of people. He asks the priests in the temple. He asks the fathers in the church. Then finally he comes across one person who tells him, you know what, you should go and ask this person who is Ramakrishna Paramhamsa, because he is one who has seen God. So Vivekananda goes to Ramakrishna Paramhamsa and asks, have you seen God? And for the first time, here is this man who says, yes, I have seen God, I speak to God, I see him and I speak to him just like I see you and I speak to you. Right? So like this, we have had many, many saints in the past. There is this story of Namdev, right? He was a person who used to walk into the temple of Vithala and speak to him. Vithala used to come to his home and speak to him, right? There is the story of so many saints who have been able to speak to God. Tyagaraja is one, Mother Meera is one. There is the story of Surdas, right? Here is a man who is blind, who can't see you and me, who can't see the world, but he has the darshan of the Lord. Krishna comes to him in the form. There is this beautiful story of he would go into this temple every day and he would sing a song in praise of Lord Krishna. And every day he would be able to describe the ornamentation of the Lord, even though he was not able to see the Lord. And that was the gift that he had. And such a saint, Surdas, actually had the vision of Lord Krishna. Well, if there was no God, if God does not exist, who were these people seeing? Who were these people talking to? The very fact that these were people who were standing outside that room, knocking for ages at the door, and finally got to go inside the door and see for themselves that there is God, they have come back and told us. So, is God there? Of course He is there. And that is why these people are able to see Him, right? But when we teach this to our children, we should also tell them that it is not enough to just take their word for it, right? Just like how they knocked at the doors, we too have to continue to knock at the doors. We too have to, with faith, keep calling out to the Lord who is inside the room, whom we can't see now, and also in the process purify ourselves so that one day we are ourselves allowed to enter the room and see for ourselves that God, and we can tell with faith that yes, God is there and I have seen Him. Well, if these children who ask these questions are from a background where the families acknowledge Swami as God or who understand the concept of an avatar, probably you can tell them that sometimes not only do people from outside the room go in, a very few rare times the Lord Himself chooses to step out of the room and prove to those people outside that, look, I really am there inside. And that is the concept of an avatar, when the Lord Himself steps out of the room and tells, yes, I do exist. And as I said, if you are in a position to tell them that, tell them with firm belief, and I have seen an avatar like that. I have seen God walking down and I know that He exists. You know, whenever I listen to debates between atheists and theists, there are many, many such debates on TV and on radio. When you listen to them, most of the time the arguments that these atheists give are so very compelling, right? They're so very appealing to the mind because it's logic and you are using your mind to process whatever you're listening and whatever your discussion you're listening to. So it definitely appeals to the mind, and we'll look at it. At some point, you are not able to refute some of those arguments which are given, and you are so drawn in and compelled by the various points the atheists give. And many times when I'm drawn into a discussion like that, I literally have to say that, I mean, all this is fine, but I have seen God, haven't I? I have lived in His presence and I am living in His presence. So that one piece of fact, it offsets all the argument that I've heard thus far, right? So similarly, Sister Deepika and all the other parents and teachers who will be facing such questions from children, you know, there is no control we have over the children after they go out into the world as preteens, teens, young adults, because the world is filled with this kind of concepts of, you know, Scientology or agnostics. All these arguments are going to come their way. We have no control over them after that. But at this point, when they ask this question, when this question is troubling them, we can tell with absolute firm faith, does God exist? Yes, He exists. How do you know? Because we've seen Him. Because we have lived with Him. Because we are living with Him. Because we have heard Him. We can connect with Him even now. So as parents, I mean, what a great gift that we all have, that we can say this with confidence when our children ask us these questions. So if you are in a position like that, and as I said, if the conditions are conducive for that, say with confidence that yes, God is there and I can see Him. Now to the second question, which is even a very, very important question, especially for children these days, because they do hear a lot of news about what is happening around the world, the wrong things that are happening, the genocides, the wars, the hatred which they see around. And this question arises from there when they ask, how did God create bad people? Why did God create bad things like war? And if it comes from a 10-year-old, how do you explain it to them? Well, sometimes when we ask these questions, we are no different from a 10-year-old, right? Even these questions even occur to us. It occurs to me, it occurs to many people. And I'm sure many of you listeners would agree with me that sometimes this question does bother us. Once in Kodaikanal, when a similar question was asked, Swami gave a very, very beautiful analogy and he explained this whole thing. And I feel it's a very beautiful and perfect analogy to explain this concept to a 10-year-old too. Swami was saying that there is a kitchen, right? And in the kitchen, you have all the raw materials that are required to make a meal. You have a jar of salt, you have a bag of rice, you have a bag of flour, you have fresh vegetables, which come right from the garden, and you have the lentils, you have the spices. You have this kitchen which is filled with all of these things. And Swami says, now a person enters into the kitchen, right? And he starts preparing a meal. So what does he do? Swami went on to say that he prepares a typical Indian meal. He makes rice, he makes sambar, he makes dal, he makes Swami said kura, which is curry with vegetables. And all of this man is making. At the end of the day, when he tastes the food that he has made, the rice is not cooked, the dal is too salty, there is no salt in the sambar, the curry is burnt, right? Then Swami says, now the meal is bad, so who is to be blamed for the bad meal? Will you blame the farmer who gave you fresh vegetables? Will you blame the farmer who brought nice rice and lentils to you? Or is the person who cooked the meal to be blamed for the bad meal? Swami said, it's of course the mistake of the cook. It is not the mistake of the ingredients. It's not the mistake of the person who provided the ingredients. Right? And Swami went on to say, that same is the case with God and the world. God has created nothing which is bad. God has created this world which is almost like that kitchen. The vegetables are fresh, the fruits are fresh. You've got the best quality rice over there. Everything that God has created is good. Swami says, but you walk into the place and you have the choice. You can either make a good meal or you can make a lousy meal. But you are responsible for both of what you do. So in that sense, that is what Swami was telling, that none of us who have been created by Swami is bad. Nobody is bad in this world. And I think even a child will be able to relate to it. Have you ever seen a child, which is probably 6 months old or 5 months old, a baby, an infant, who is not looking innocent, who is not looking pure? Because God creates all of us pure. God creates all of us as embodiments of that purity which He Himself is. But what happens on the way is what we need to give our attention to. And Swami says, with the kind of thoughts that we think, the kind of words that we speak, the kind of actions that we do, we become a good or a bad person in the eyes of the world, right? Take for instance, a person who is going out to school and the teacher asks him something and he says a lie, right? So nobody knows it, and the day passes. The next day comes, again the child tells a lie. The third day, again the child tells a lie. Over a period of time, the people in the class, his classmates and the teacher realize that this boy keeps lying every day. What happens? After a period of time, they say that this boy is a bad boy and he is not trustworthy. He was not created bad. He was not a bad boy in the beginning. But because of what he kept saying, the lies that he kept saying, now he became a bad boy, quotes and quotes, right? Same is the case with everybody. If you go out and let's say that you become a bully in school, you start troubling somebody, and if you do that repeatedly, then eventually you will get this label saying that he is a bully, he is a bad boy. You were not given birth to be a bully, you were not given birth to be a bad boy, but it was your words, your thoughts and your actions which made you what you are. And that is why Swami keeps saying the acronym WATCH, right? Watch your words, action, thoughts, character, and your heart. Because that is what decides what we all become. That is what decides over a period of time if we become good people or bad people. Nobody created in this world is actually bad. It is only our words and actions and thoughts which make us bad. And it's not like what when we go and help somebody, when we speak lovingly, when we act selflessly, when we try to help others, you are not doing something which is actually a good act versus the others being bad acts. Swami says, what does Swami say? He says, all of these are human values because these are your true nature. It is not like you're doing something which is not your nature. These constitute what your true nature is. And Swami goes on to say that when you keep repeating these actions, when you keep having good thoughts, you express what is your true human nature, which is your pure self, right? So it is not that God has created us good or bad. God has created everything in his own image, as Swami would say. But there are only bad cooks, right? We go into the kitchen, we come into this world, and through our actions, we prepare a bad meal. And that is what we see all around the world. All the hatred, all the unhappiness, and all the selfishness that we see have been created by us. It's not been created by God, right? But there is a hope for all of us. You know, we're all like that man who went into the kitchen to cook. Swami says that there is a cooking manual, right? Even if you don't know to cook, if you diligently follow that manual, even you and I who are not good cooks can make a good meal. That's what Swami says. And it's not any alien thing that Swami is talking of as a cooking manual. All the scriptures of all the worlds, of all the religions, they're all these various cooking manuals, which talk about patience, which talk about peace, which talk about love, which talk about helping others. And that's all we need to do. And if each one of us do, and it's in our own hand. See, when we get into this idea that God has created some people bad and God has created some people good, there are two things which can happen. You can either develop hatred for those people whom you think God has created bad, or you can take it for granted that you are good and you will always be good. But it is very important to remember that it is in what we do, what we think, and what we speak, what is going to make us good or bad. So even as we are children, even as we grow up, we need to be very careful of all of these things. Are we being helpful? Are we ready to harm another person because it benefits us? Are we ready to harm another person because it gives us a little bit of thrill? All of these acts, one on top of the other, pile up to make a person good or bad. So if you want to be at the end of the day not like any of these people who are unpleasant and who has made the children ask these questions of why there are bad people, why has God created bad people, if you don't want to end up being like that, then I think it lies in each one of our hands, in what we say, what we do, what we think. So it's up to each one of us whether we go into the kitchen and make a good meal or a bad meal. And at the end of the day, we'll have to offer that meal to Swami. And it is up to us to make a very tasty and palatable meal for Swami, right? So this is what I thought will probably be an answer which I would give. Rather, it's not my answer. It's a very, very beautiful answer that Swami gave to a student who asked this question in Kodaikanal. It's a very simple meaning. You know, we always have this doubt in our minds, you know, why there is so much of evil. And Swami would keep repeating this. It's God has not created evil. God has given you everything, and what you make of it is either good or bad. So can we explain this to children? I'm not saying that this is the only way. This was the way which appealed to me when I heard it from Swami. So I thought I'll share it with all of you. So going back to the question that Sister Deepika asked, as I started, there are three things always keep in mind. Answer confidently. And if you and I who have seen Swami, who had the good fortune of living in Swami's presence, cannot be confident about these questions, you know, we may not be always able to, we may not always be able to explain. See, when we talk about explanation, it comes to each one's intellectual ability, right? That's a different thing altogether. But confidence and faith is given to everybody. Every mother, every teacher, every father can be confident when they say the truth, when they speak about what they believe in. And that is what is important when children ask us these questions. Say with confidence, yes, God is there. Swami said that's the mantra. Devudu Unnadu. If we can tell ourselves that, if we repeat that for ourselves, then we will be able to tell it with confidence if somebody asks us that question. The second thing that I said was, try not to give the complicated version of your idea of God to children. They will eventually come to that. It is more important to give them the faith first and to come around the comprehensive idea. They will eventually figure out what's the way to get there. The last thing is, as many stories and analogies as you can give them. Because as I said, you know, when they grow up, when they meet people outside, when they're going to be hit by these ideas, different ideas from around the world, at some point, it is all of these stories which will be churning from within and giving them insights and answers. So as much as possible in this young age, at every opportunity that you get, tell them stories of these saints and sages and these pure ones who you and I have been comfortable in seeing the Lord. We could just, as Swami would say, you can hop into a bus, you can get into a train and come and see me. But these sages and saints have seen the Lord, have heard the Lord when the Lord was not on earth as an avatar. As Swami said, you know, Lord is in the world like there is butter in the milk. It is the churning process which brings them out. And these are saints who have mastered the churning process by which they were able to make the Lord manifest in front of them. So as much as possible, tell them these stories, tell them chinnakathas, tell them analogies. And of course, the answer to the two questions I did give, I'm not going to go back into them again. I think I spoke about it in quite detail. So, Sister Deepika, these were the answers which I thought I'll give you. So do try it out with your SSC children and do let me know if it really helps. Well, we'd love to know if there are any other methods too. So if you have any more questions or any clarifications on what I said, you can as always write to me at prem@radiosai.org. Well, with that, dear listeners, I'm going to wrap this week's program. I know it's a bit early, but there were two questions, so I took a bit longer to answer them. And we have Brother Raghu coming in a little bit early today, and he has something nice to share. So instead of me narrating incidents, I'm sure he's going to narrate something interesting for all of you. Do you have a question on practical spirituality or questions on which you're wondering what would be Swami's solution to it? Well, if you have a question like that, then you can write in to me. And you can send in your query to my personal mail ID. That's prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. If you can record your question and send it to me, that would be wonderful. I can play your question in your own voice. If you wish to be anonymous, you can tell me that. Even if it's in your voice, I'll not mention your name. If the questions are about practical situations, I think that would be more helpful for me, for the people who are listening, and for the person who is asking the question. That would be really wonderful. I most humbly offer this effort at Swami's Lotus Feet. I thank Sister Deepika for that beautiful question. It gives us an opportunity to dwell into how do you explain such a very, very difficult concept which even we are grappling with to a little child. I'm going to play for you one of my favorite Telugu songs. I don't know how many of you will be able to relate to the lyrics of the song. It's a beautiful song. It's a typical Telugu folk song. It was sung many times in front of Swami. It's beautiful words. I started off by saying the summer could be as bad as it wants to be, that as long as we are in the shade of His love, there's nothing to worry. And that's precisely what the song says. It says we don't want to be in huge bungalows or palaces. As long as we live in your shade, that's more than enough for us. I'm going to leave you with this song, dear listeners. I'll come back to you at 12:30 and I'll come back to you with the next episode of Answering Booth next week at 11 a.m. Till then, enjoy the song, and after this you'll be joined by Brother Raghu.
కోటి దండాలు దండాలయ్యా దండాలయ్యా కోటి దండాలు శత కోటి దండాలు పండ నుండి స్వామి వినీవని మాతొకతే చాలు నీ మాతొకతే చాలు దండాలయ్యా దండాలయ్యా కోటి దండాలు శత కోటి దండాలు పండ నుండి స్వామి వినీవని మాతొకతే చాలు నీ మాతొకతే చాలు మేడలొద్దు మిద్దేలొద్దు నీ నీడన ఉంటే చాలు ఆటలొద్దు పాటలొద్దు నీ మాట వింటే చాలు సిరులు వద్దు గిరులు వద్దు వరద హస్తం ఒకటే చాలు సిరులు వద్దు గిరులు వద్దు వరద హస్తం ఒకటే చాలు గెలుపు వద్దు ఓటమొద్దు చల్లనైన చూపే చాలు దండాలయ్యా దండాలయ్యా కోటి దండాలు శత కోటి దండాలు పండ నుండి స్వామి వినీవని మాటొకటే చాలు నీ మాటొకటే చాలు జనులకై నీవు అవతరించినావంట విన్న పాలనందుకుని పాలించే దొరవంట దీనజనులకై నీవు అవతరించినావంట విన్న పాలనందుకుని పాలించే దొరవంట ఎనభై ఏళ్ళు గమాకై త్యాగమూర్తివై నిలిచి ఎనభై ఏళ్ళు గమాకై త్యాగమూర్తివై నిలిచి కన్నీరును పన్నీరుగా మార్చే మా దేవుడవంట దండాలయ్యా దండాలయ్యా కోటి దండాలు శత కోటి దండాలు పండ నుండే స్వామి వినీవని మాటొకటే చాలు నీ మాటొకటే చాలు దండాలయ్యా దండాలయ్యా కోటి దండాలు శత కోటి దండాలు పండ నుండే స్వామి వినీవని మాటొకటే చాలు నీ మాటొకటే చాలు